This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Rethink 2014.
The American economy.
Climate change without.
Hacking.
Different religions in it.
Sustainability.
Social media.
Security. Freedom.
Technology.
Marriage.
Essentially ethics.
Privacy.
Throughout the month, we've had conversations that provoke new thinking about social mobility, America's role as a global superpower, and the role of fantasy in marital fidelity. Today, an inquiry into the medium that we are sharing at this moment, radio. Since the dawn of the digital age, we've been hearing that the end of radio is nigh. With countless online streaming services and podcasts available on mobile devices, and now cars, listeners can create their own playlists and preferences, and radio will go the way of the buggy whip and the printed newspaper. While program directors and sales and development teams have been fretting over how to keep audiences, people like Jesse Thorne have been creating them. Jesse is host and producer of NPR's program Bullseye. He's also the founder of Maximum Fun, a podcasting network that is home to several popular comedy podcasts, including Jordan Jesse Go and Judge John Hodgman, both of which Jesse produces and co-hosts, and the storytelling series Risk. If that's not enough, he also hosts Put This On, a video series and blog about men's style. Jesse, so glad you could make time for us today. Welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Okay, Jesse, so does the future of public radio mean that I have to have as many jobs as you have?
Oh, man, you're starting with a real pain point. I mean, I never expected to have this many jobs. I just thought I would get a regular job. When I graduated from college, you know, like I went to a pretty good public university, you know, sort of mid-level public university, and did well and had a nice college radio show and thought I could just get a job at a radio station and do that as my career. And it just didn't work out that way. And it's not working out that way for a lot more people in media these days. And there's sort of a good side and a bad side to that.
You're straddling this world pretty successfully. You have a terrestrial radio show. That means carried on radio stations, you know, that have radio towers. And you also have podcasts, which are available online. I guess a question to start with is, do we need to rethink what radio actually is now that we have mobile devices and connected cars and audio streaming? Am I still listening to radio?
Radio as it is, as it has always been, has some really great advantages. One of them is ubiquity. You know, the average American household has something like, I can't remember, it's like 9 or 11 radios in it. So basically every room in your house has a radio in it somewhere, whether it's an old Walkman or a clock radio or a shower radio or a car radio in your garage. So there are very few places where you can't just press a button and there's the radio. It's coming out of a speaker and you can enjoy it. You know, radio is also locally based and typically locally based and live. And so, you know, it can be responsive in ways that media that doesn't have those qualities can't be. You know, I live here in Los Angeles. And I grew up in San Francisco. If I want to know if I just felt an earthquake, it's actually more convenient for me still in 2014 to go to the radio than it is to go to the internet usually. So there are some advantages to radio, and they extend to the places where we tend to listen to audio the most, like cars. You know, cars all have radios in them, and almost no cars have the ability to stream data.
But that may be true now, right? I mean, a couple of observations here. People under 25 do not own radios or listen to radio as we program it here at NHPR, for example. And cars will have onboard computers soon enough. Right?
Yeah. Well, I would say that young people still do consume a lot of radio. You know, it's less than it was before, but they still do consume a lot of radio. You know, radio isn't any more going to disappear than books are. You know what I mean? It has some built-in conveniences and, you know, it will be a long decline and other media will replace some elements of it, but it's not going to totally disappear. As far as why public radio doesn't, well, it just doesn't program for those people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have the incentives to program for those people because it's, you know, substantially donor supported and young people don't have the money to make major gifts that sustain public radio stations or institutions. So while the mandate is there to serve all people, the incentives aren't.
Okay, well, there are two different tracks here. One is the survival of the future of public radio, which means that public radio darn well better get young people listening because they want them to listen through their life and support. But let's go down the other track here first. We've been hearing about the predictions of the last days of radio for about 20 years now. So I was surprised to read Pew's State of the News Media 2013. That study showed that 92% of Americans age 12 or older listen to the radio at least weekly. Why then all the doom and gloom about the death of radio being nigh?
Well, I think the truth is that there are other options on the horizon. And it's easy to think that this is a dichotomy, which goes, number one, this is 1973 and FM radio is on the rise and everybody's jamming out to the latest hit from the Doobie Brothers. And we all have a mass culture that's propagated by, you know, Wolfman Jack or whatever. I'm mixing up my time periods a little bit here. I hope you'll forgive me.
We're still with you. You're in the album rock era right now.
Yeah,
somehow.
Exactly. So it's the peak of radio when you listen to your local morning radio DJ to go line up for concert tickets for 8 hours, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the people think it's that golden age or it's radio is dead, blah, 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 blah. Radio has some great advantages that I think will keep it alive for a long time as things decline slowly. One of them is it's relatively inexpensive to produce radio compared to, say, a newspaper, which requires a team of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Radio is relatively inexpensive to make. That was one of the reasons I could make a show totally by myself for 6 or 7 years, however long it was that I was doing my show without help. Audio is within one's grasp.
We're speaking with Jesse Thorne, a sort of radio impresario of sorts, both in the terrestrial and the online or podcast universe of radio, about the future of radio. We're rethinking that paradigm, the way that it's always been, that radio has come from some station somewhere and been listened to by the masses. Well, now it's being produced by people and selected by people individually. And that's a question for you, Jesse. You know, right now, everything hinges on self-selection, right? Especially if you're talking about this under 25 cohort. These are people who find things that they want to listen to, podcast them, stream them. How do they find things? How does your podcast, for example, get distinguished from all of those that are out there?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big challenges in the world of the internet. I think what we've seen the last 5 years or so, as social media has become sort of the dominant form of the internet, it's sort of replaced the, you know, the blog role on a personal website in that way, is that quote-unquote viral content becomes dominant, which is to say content that someone wants to tell someone else about. That is not always the best content. Being the best content can help, but generally it is something that inspires emotion, that has a surprise in it. Those are the things that go viral, and that's what's dominant right now. That's a lot harder in the audio space, but you still see its effects. I mean, I think that if you take the example of my friend Mark Maron's show, WTF, which is a very big podcast, you know, hundreds of thousands of listeners, I think Mark's personal story and some of the incidents that happened on his show early on. Mark is a stand-up comic who had sort of hit a brick wall in his career and then decided to do this podcast. And the show is about him sort of working out his issues as he talks to his colleagues and contemporaries and so on. And that story was viral in and of itself. You know, it's something you want to tell someone else about. And that is sort of what spreads these things. It doesn't work as well as it does with, you know, with text or in some cases with short videos. But, I mean, the other things would be if someone is famous, if something is well-known from outside of the world of internet audio, you know, if it's the Oprah show or whatever, you know, Adam Carolla had a huge fan base before he started podcasting, and he brought them into podcasting with him.
Well, we're just scratching the surface, so please stay with us as word of mouth continues our rethink of radio. In a world without dials, when we just choose what we want to hear, will radio still be able to surprise us in the future? Will public radio continue to exist? We're going to ask those questions and much more after the break. Stay with us. I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Word of Mouth from NHPR. Today's Rethink 2014 takes aim at a medium that we are all sharing right now, radio. Like so many people listening at this moment, I grew up thinking radio was the thing on the kitchen counter, which brought us the morning news. Later, I listened to Top 40 and broadcasts from the faraway city of Boston, in rec rooms and car radios, far away from our parents. This is where I still get the morning news and so much more on public radio. That is to say that I'm admitting a strong pro-radio bias and an investment in radio as a broadcast medium. Word of Mouth also welcomes and celebrates the many creative ways that people are turning traditional broadcast on its ear. My guest, Jesse Thorne, is one of those people. He's host of Bullseye on NPR and founder of the phenomenally successful podcast network called Maximum Fun. He's here to rethink this medium that you, me, and every supporter of public radio is a part of. So, Jesse, I've just admitted my pretty traditional experience with radio, which was self-selecting to a degree. But I'm remembering also clearly the first time that I heard a public radio story that made me think, wow, I never would have thought about that before. It was in the backseat of my father's car. There was a story about Jews in rural Mississippi. And I just remember, you know, hearing about the experience of Bubba Kornfeld. I'm not kidding. That was really his name. And I thought, I never would know about this guy. Something connected to me. Now, will people who are curating their own experiences so carefully based on what they like to hear, will they be surprised? Will they just be kind of confirming their own biases as we hear about what we do in the news and searching out news?
Well, I think that one of the things that people like the most is to be surprised. So, you know, if you're talking about ideology or sort of cultural cohort, yeah, I mean, I think that will continue to be focused, but I think that's already focused now. I mean, I think the audience that listens to public radio is demographically and culturally significantly different from the audience that listens to Hot Talk. But I think that in terms of moments and feelings, you know, as I said, one of the biggest categories of viral videos is something where something remarkably surprising happens. Mm-hmm. That's what people tend to tell someone about. You know, this conversation where we're talking about ideas and in a slightly abstracted manner isn't the kind of thing that goes viral on the internet. If I told you a personal story about how my grandmother died, but I learned an important lesson that helped me bring my child into the world and it related to this, that is the kind of thing that would go viral on the internet. And to some extent, that's the kind of thing that you're talking about.
All right. So let's get to your grandmother then. Well, I want to go back to the numbers thing here, or the ubiquity, I think, is what you're talking about. You said Mark Maron's podcast, really popular, hundreds of thousands. Okay. For years, Morning Edition and Rush Limbaugh have been switching places as the most listened to radio broadcasts on terrestrial radio. It was only in 2012 that Rush had his first significant dip in ratings, went down to 14.75 million weekly listeners from 15 million. Other big numbers here. Howard Stern used to serve about 20 million listeners on terrestrial radio. Then he went to satellite radio, now maybe 1.25 million listen at any given point. So the numbers, very, very different measures of success from somebody doing a podcast, hundreds of thousands, compared to tens of millions of people who are listening to terrestrial radio. Now, I don't want to sound like, you know, a newspaper editor in 1999 or defensive in saying that our numbers are so much better. I want to ask you where you see that heading.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that that will continue to be the case. I mean, the truth is that there are things that lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of people like. They're like the Super Bowl, you know, or American Idol. There are things that are designed for huge audiences. And there are things that are so great that they get huge audiences, you know. But there are things that will always be like that, like the Super Bowl. Those things are immensely valuable. I don't think they're disappearing forever. But in the world of the internet, you have something very different, which is the difference between something that is good enough that someone won't change the channel and something that's so good that someone chooses it. People will go to extraordinary lengths to just continue on whatever path they're on. So picking something is a really significant act. You know, that's why advertisers always want to advertise to 18 to 34-year-olds, it's because once you've decided that you like Crest toothpaste, you know, you just use Crest toothpaste forever just because it would be a hassle to pick a new toothpaste because what if it wasn't good, you know?
Right.
And so people don't like picking things. So if it's something that someone has picked, it's a much deeper, more powerful relationship. I know that of the tens of thousands of people that listen to one of MaximumFun.org's shows on a podcast, that audience is so much more connected to the programs than the tens of thousands of people who listen to Bullseye on the radio. Mm-hmm. And that's in the context of public radio, where I think listeners are relatively strongly connected to the content they're listening to compared to, you know, 105.4 Hits FM.
Right. Such good programming that people choose it. And in public radio, we count on them to then pay for it directly, which brings us to the financial model, which I think we have to talk about if we're rethinking radio. Right now, I'm looking at the top 10 podcasts on iTunes, very heavy with public radio programs. This American Life, Radio Lab, along with, you know, Dan Patrick and Welcome to Night Vale. People are definitely appreciating and downloading interesting stuff. But for the terrestrial radio station, this is where things get dodgy for us, that your podcast, Roman Mars 99% Invisible, Radio Lab, can invite people to support them directly. The downside is that it is taking money, perhaps, from hardworking radio stations like New Hampshire Public Radio. So is that going to cause tension between those who are program makers and program carriers?
Well, I mean, I think it does cause tension, although I don't necessarily agree 100% with the – I mean, I think the premise that you're asserting causes tension. I don't know if that premise is really 100% correct. I think that people's giving – is about what they care about. It's not about what they've given to other things. You know, we live in a very profligate country. You know, people, the United States is very rich. The people who give to things have enough money to give more. Even if you make $35,000 a year and you give $50 to your local public radio station, you still have another $50 to give to something else if you are moved to do so. So I don't think that it's a zero-sum game. I don't think that giving to one thing means that you're not giving to something else. You know, the science of nonprofit development, my dad was a fundraiser for most of my life, backs that up. So I would say that people have really significant relationships with their local public radio stations. I mean, I care very much about KPCC and KCRW here in Los Angeles. I grew up in San Francisco, and I still care very much about KALW in San Francisco. And that relationship is one that people want to support. And local public radio stations provide a service that's different from what a podcast does. A podcast is a really cool thing, but it isn't an always-on source of stuff about where you live, and it's not a curated collection of stuff that's designed for people who live where you live, and it's not a brand that you have known and trusted for decades, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
But what if you're raised getting free content everywhere? You know, there's no if you're used to that model, what is going to make you shell out for anything, connected or not?
Well, if you want to see it, if you want to see it continue to exist. I mean, when I told my dad that I was going to start this thing, my company, as a mostly donor-supported for-profit company, he thought that was the craziest thing in the world. And now I'm sitting in an office with 8 or 9 employees and, you know, really significant revenues, because I think that while there is this feeling everything should be free, I also think that there is a feeling that goes along with that that is underrepresented, which is this feeling of, and I should support things that I like, which is the way of paying for everything should be free. I mean, you in the radio business and me both in the radio business and in the podcasting business are giving everything we do away for free. Anybody in New Hampshire with a radio can listen to New Hampshire Public Radio for free. So the people who are supporting us are the people who think that is a significant thing and want to see it continue. But I generally think that that feeling that young people get everything for free because they're so entitled is wrong. And in fact, young people want to get everything for free. They want to have access to everything. They want that promise of the internet that they can get the things that they love the most, you know, without there being an impediment to them doing so. But they also want to support those things so that they can continue to exist. They want to have a relationship with those things. That can include, you know, giving money voluntarily.
Jesse Thorne, is it sunny there in Los Angeles?
It is pretty sunny. I think the high is going to be in the mid-70s today.
Do you think we could all come and work for you?
Yeah, absolutely. By all means. I'm putting up a shingle. I'm hiring the entire state of New Hampshire.
Jesse Thorne, host and producer of NPR's program Bullseye, among other things, also the founder of the podcasting network Maximum Fun. Thank you so much for your time today.
Of course. Thank you so much for thinking of me.